Welcome to Interparty Conflict, the podcast where we answer your questions so you can have the best tabletop gaming experience possible. My name is Gabe.
And my name is Jeff.
And we're going to answer your questions today. But first, I have a question. Jeff.
Yep.
How are you doing today? Well, sorry. That I was purposely leaving a really long pause there.
Oh, no. I was like, oh, no, did he not hear me?
No, I heard you. Sorry, but we're not doing this in person.
It's
not quite the same. Should we do that over or should I just leave it in?
I don't know.
I'll just leave it in, I guess. How are you doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. So we'll probably talk more about it later in the episode, but we just had last week before recording this, we played 2/3 of a game of Dawn of Worlds with the our patrons.
Yeah.
And holy crap, this game was a blast.
Yeah, I came in a little late, but I was able to spectate, and even just spectating, I was like, this is great. It was exciting. It was really neat. It was neat to see. It was really cool.
Yeah. I didn't really know what to expect. It was really hard. I wasn't able to find any podcasts of Dawn of Worlds. Crit Academy did an episode about it, maybe a year or two ago. And I listened to that, of course, but then there was one or two videos on YouTube, I think. I watched a little bit of a couple of those, but I didn't really know what the game was going to be like. All I knew really was that Crit Academy said it was really, really good. And I was a little bit nervous because, it's like, well, what if it's not exciting? What if, what if it's not really a lot of fun or anything? What if it's just kind of, meh or whatever?
Right, yeah.
But holy crap, from 5 minutes into the game, I was already having so much fun, and we didn't have time to finish it. So we're actually going to have to do the last portion of it, this next, coming up for the October's Patreon game as well. So I'm really excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody who doesn't know what Dawn of Worlds is, we'll get to what it is later.
Yeah.
It's a very, very fun game, and the rules are free online. It's like a 6-page document or something like that. So if you listen to this episode and you want to play it yourself, I highly, highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah. 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 It's the rules aren't super duper complicated or anything. It's just sort of, I don't know. It's hard to say how it'll go because it is a lot up to the imagination of the players.
Yeah. It's all about imagination. The hardest part, honestly, was just finding a good online app to use because the game is meant to be played in person. But we had to use an online whiteboard, but it worked. There was one thing that I did have a problem with, but other than that, it worked perfectly.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about playing some more of that in the coming weeks, and I would love to I just want to play this game more just in general. I would love to see what sort of stuff we're able to come up with in other instances.
Yeah. I feel like anytime we want to start playing any tabletop game, it's like, first let's do Dawn of Worlds and set up the setting or something. Yeah.
Do you want to go ahead and jump into this episode?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
So I want you to imagine, Jeff, that you are at a party. Let's say this is like a high school party. Or middle school or something. Who knows? You're younger than you are now. And everybody gets together and they decide that you all are going to play Truth or Dare.
Ooh.
And so, you're sitting around the group, and eventually somebody points at you, Jeff, and they say, Jeff, Truth or Dare.
Dare. No, truth. Truth.
Just then, you're at your friend's house. Your friend's parent pokes their head into the room and says, "Hey, do you guys need any more soda?"
And I say, "Yes, please." Okay, was that my truth?
maybe it was. I will mention that you do notice that your friend's parent is particularly tall and scaly, and has let's say bronze scales. I always make the dragons. Chromatic dragons. They're never metallic. So this is a bronze dragon is this friend of yours? Or your friend's a half dragon. Who knows? Anyway, sure, somebody says whatever. That's your truth, whatever. But then eventually the question gets asked, where's all the treasure at? Because your friend is a half dragon. You know, the question gets asked to your friend, hey, where's all your treasure? And then your friend sort of nervously looks around and then, you know, by rules of truth or dare has to tell the truth. And so Your friend very shamefully admits the treasure is in the dragon's hoard.
I knew it.
So today's Dragon's Hoard item was submitted by Monty F. via email. The item is called Veritasius, and apparently the name is Latin in origin and roughly translates to having the nature of truth.
Mm.
And Monty did clarify that he actually had never heard of the Swords of Answering, which this is actually very similar to. So if you know what those are, I didn't. I had to Google it for this. But if you know what those are, forget about those. Imagine they don't exist. And so the item today is Veritasius. Veritasius was forged deep within a dwarven enclave by a priest that was given divine inspiration by Moradin to craft the blade. It was forged in Dragon's Fire, another name for lava, apparently, for the great hero Darvos Giantsbane to settle a several decade-long dispute about their Dwergar neighbors. The hero gave the weapon its name in his original tongue. The sword allowed him to triumph over the Dwergar and pull the truth from those they captured to deal the final blow on the enemy's leadership. It was ultimately a lie he told that brought his downfall, though. He swore to his enemies he would release the captives and instead cut them down with his blade as a final vindictive act of rage and fury. With his oath and dedication to honesty, justice, and fairness broken, so too was his sword shattered. So, of this, the sword shattered and 9 weapons came of it.
Ooh.
They all have slightly different names. I don't know if I'm going to read all of these names because they are all slight variations of, you know, Veritasius in some way. But there's a lawful good scimitar, a chaotic good katana, a neutral good short sword, a lawful neutral rapier, a chaotic neutral longsword, a true neutral bastard sword, the lawful evil dagger, a chaotic evil caris. I'm not sure what a caris is, but it just says to use stats for a dagger, and a neutral evil dirk, also use stats for a dagger. The blades have enough sentience to alert their owners when another truth blade is within 100 feet. So these are each, I don't know if the individual weapons have any particular stats. I don't think so. I think they're just like slightly magical in some way, but they don't like count as magic weapons. Because If you have 2 or more blades, you can spend a long rest performing a ritual to combine them.
Ooh.
So if you combine 2 of them, I don't think it becomes anything particularly special. However, if you have 3, if you combine 3 of these blades together, it becomes a +1 sword, so you get a +1 to attack and damage rolls. And while wielding this weapon, you gain advantage on persuasion and intimidation checks when trying to learn the truth.
Hmm.
So you get better at getting the truth out of people either by coercing them or, you know, forcing them to give it to you.
Yeah.
If you combine 6 of these blades, you gain the following benefits. You get a +2 to attack and damage rolls. While wielding the weapon, you still have advantage on persuasion and intimidation checks when trying to learn the truth. And you may cast Zone of Truth once per short or long rest. And then if you combine all 9, the legendary blade Veritasius is wielded once more. This is a legendary blade. It requires attunement. Upon attuning to this sword, it takes a shape befitting its wielder. The shape must be one of its shattered forms. So if you want it to be a rapier, it will be. If you want it to be a katana, if you want it to be a caris, whatever that is, It will take the form of one of those 9 weapons. The weapon grants a +3 attack and damage, so it's a +3 weapon. And you still have the advantage on persuasion and intimidation checks. You gain. You can cast Zone of Truth 3 times per short or long rest. Also, you may focus on a target you can see. The target must succeed on a DC 15 charisma saving throw. On a failure, during the next 10 minutes, you know if the subject deliberately or knowingly speaks a lie. The spell does not reveal the truth, does not uncover unintentional inaccuracies, or necessarily reveal if they evade the truth either. So that's what it does. It's a +3 weapon that gives you advantage on persuasion and intimidation when you're trying to get the truth. You can cast Zone of Truth 3 times per short or long rest. And then you can sort of do a mini Zone of Truth that doesn't seem to have a limit on how many times you can do it. You just kind of like look at someone, and if they fail a save, you can tell if they speak a lie on purpose.
Right.
So yeah, so that's Veritasius. I like how it's, you know, a whole bunch of different swords that can be combined into one. I think that's a really neat detail.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if anything could be done to make each of the 9 swords a little bit more distinct. Like, I know it says that they have enough sentience to alert you if you're near one of the other ones.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe each of them could have like some, I mean, who knows if this is even necessary or if it would make them noticeably better. But
right.
If they each had something else that was unique about them, I don't know. Maybe if you like built a campaign around these.
Yeah. You know. One thing about this, like, I really like it. It's really cool. But I feel like it might be for 9 things that come together that make a legendary item. It feels a little underpowered.
Okay.
Like, it doesn't feel as powerful as it could be.
Yeah.
Because this could be a really cool, like, at least a subplot of the campaign or something, of a campaign that where you're like collecting all of these weapons,
sure,
putting them together. Because I really like that if you're combining like a few of them, you get like a decent magic item. You get a, you know, you get a +1 weapon with some skill advantage.
Yeah.
Although if I were to like put this in a campaign and to make it like at least a decent part of the campaign, I probably would make each individual one have something special about it. And then also, like, I'd probably go nuts and like make it so like certain combinations do certain things.
Okay.
So yeah. Like if you found the chaotic evil one and the lawful good one and put those together, the thing that it would create would be like, it would be different than if you found the true neutral and a lawful neutral one and put those together.
Okay.
But like, I could see like, you know, the further they are from each other when you put them together, the more like volatile the combination, like the more like crazy it is.
Sure.
But I don't know. Like, I feel like you could go kind of crazy, like adding more mechanics to this, and then like the final legendary blade. I feel like, I mean, like +3 is good. I almost feel like you should just have a constant zone of truth.
Yeah, that could work.
Like you just have an aura of zone of truth always on your person. You just,
sure.
Or something like that. Or at least when you're like wielding it or something.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good idea. It does seem a bit underwhelming, particularly the legendary, and it requires attunement. So you kind of can just go hog wild with it, I guess. I mean, it's not an artifact, but it's still, you know,
that's true. That's
I almost
true.
Feel like it should be.
Yeah, you know what? That I think that's where my mind was going anyway. Like, was like thinking of this thing as a artifact.
Yeah,
I mean, because it does feel like an artifact. Because it's this thing that's, you know, it's this thing of dwarven legend that is split into 9, and if you collect them, then it becomes, you know, you reforge it, and it's like, yeah, no, that sounds like a, you know, that sounds like an artifact.
Yeah,
I mean, that's definitely legendary for sure, but you know, I feel like you can beef this thing up to be artifact status and be a really cool, like, part of a campaign plot.
Yeah, so I think this item is really cool. However, like, it's got a lot of potential. It definitely needs something more, you know, to make it like really, really good.
Gabe, it's 9 items. What more do you want?
I guess. Well, again, I don't know if making each individual weapon unique is necessary. That might just be too much, especially, you know, for a segment like the Dragon Sword. But
I mean, you can make it look unique, you know. You can definitely make it like, oh, this is absolutely something that is special and not just an ordinary weapon.
Sure. Maybe that's all it needs. If you just had like a unique picture for each one.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know.
don't know. But yeah, all in all, it's cool, though.
Like, yeah, definitely like a really cool idea. Again, apparently there's this thing called the Swords of Answering, which is kind of similar, but I haven't done enough research to know exactly what that is. So, yeah. So anyway, good job, Monty F. Thank you for submitting that. Once again, that was Veritasius, submitted by Monty via email. So that'll do it for the Dragon's Horde for today. If anybody else, Jeff, wanted to submit magic items for the Dragon's Horde, or if they wanted to submit questions for us to discuss, or stories for the Funeral Pyre or Retirement Village, how would they get those to us?
They could send us an email at innerpartyconflict@gmail.com or join us on our Innerparty Discord at bit.ly/innerpartydiscord.
That's correct. And I want to say that Dan West from Brute Force and Ignorance has apparently been having a lot of trouble getting onto our Discord. He used that link and it never worked for him.
Huh.
So if anybody out there is having trouble getting on our Discord, let me know. I'm not sure why, because when I use the link, it seems to work fine. But
yeah,
if anybody else is having trouble with that, let us know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if anybody else would like to join the Discord, it's open to everybody. We would love to have all of you on there, anybody who wants to come. So let us know if you're having trouble.
I don't know. Maybe we got to re-up on it because it's supposed to be a permanent link, but
I don't know. Like I said, like when I type in the link myself, it works fine. So I don't know.
Sure. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's because he's in a different country. Yeah, I mean, he did eventually get on. I don't know exactly what changed, but
I don't know. Knows.
Anyway. So join us on our Discord. There's a lot of fun stuff happening on there. So before we go any further, we have a couple giveaways to give away today.
Mm-hmm.
First is our usual giveaway. We are giving away a copy of Unearthed Tips and Tricks Volume 2, courtesy of Crit Academy. Unearthed Tips and Tricks is a series of supplements from the Crit Academy podcast where they have a whole bunch of character concepts, encounter concepts, monster variants, magic items, player tips, and DM tips. Tons of stuff for players and DMs alike. Lots of great content in there. We already gave away Volume 1 for quite a while. Now we're giving away Volume 2. So, Jeff, who is the winner of Unearthed Tips and Tricks Volume 2 today?
Today's winner is Carl L.
Winner.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. Yes. Congratulations, Carl. You should be getting that in your email pretty soon. Be sure to leave Crit Academy a review. If they get more reviews, they'll get more attention, and they can also know what things to improve in the future. So please leave them a review. Thank you to Crit Academy for facilitating that. Thank you, Carl L., for entering. Jeff, if anybody else wanted to enter this drawing, if they wanted to be like Carl L. and win a free copy of this great supplement, how would they do so?
They could send us an email at innerpartyconflict@gmail.com with Unearthed Tips and Tricks Volume 2 in the subject line.
Yes. And then we also have another giveaway just in October. We are giving away a copy of Strahd's Manual of Shadow from our listener, Seawood Scribe. So this right here is another great supplement. This one is a supplement with new races, new classes. It's got backgrounds, feats, spells, items, got a ton of monsters, tons and tons of cool stuff, all horror themed, like, you know, Strahd and Ravenloft and all that kind of stuff. Lots of really cool stuff. Perfect for October. Seawood Scribe contacted us and was interested in giving out a copy of this every week during October. So we are giving away a copy of this today. So Jeff, who is our second winner of Strahd's Manual of Shadow this October?
Our second winner is Doug A.
Winner.
Yes. Congratulations, Doug A. You should be getting that in your email pretty soon. It's a great product. So be sure to leave Seawood Scribe a review. Let everybody know what you think, positive and negative, you know, whatever you got. Hopefully it can get more attention to this product, more attention to other things that Seawood Scribe may be working on in the future. So huge thank you to Seawood Scribe for making this possible. This is really, really cool that they're giving out this huge supplement. Like, this thing's like 200 pages. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's huge, and it's got a lot. There's a lot of cool stuff in there. I really like it.
Yes. So thank you to them. Thank you, Doug A, for entering. Jeff, if anybody else wanted to be like Doug A and win a free copy of this other supplement, this great supplement, this October, I don't know how much more time they have. Not much. But how would they enter this drawing?
They can enter this drawing by sending us an email at innerpartyconflict@gmail.com with Strahd's Manual of Shadow in the subject line.
Yes, or something closely approximating that. It's only for a few weeks. I'm not going to be a stickler for how accurate it is. All right. And next up, I want to thank all of our wonderful patrons. We have a Patreon campaign at patreon.com/interpartyconflict. For anyone not familiar, Patreon's an online platform. You can pledge to donate a certain amount of money per month to the creator of your choice. If you contribute to us, we've got some outtakes. We've got fantasy fiction that I've written in the past. I've written a whole bunch of short stories that are on there. I've got a few of them up as audio fiction as well. We've got a monthly bonus podcast. We just put out one a little late in September, but we just got one out. And I have a fun idea for something in October. I'm not sure how easily we'll be able to get it going, though. So I'll keep updates on that as we go. And then also, we have a monthly Roll20 game. This last one was, I guess it technically wasn't on Roll20, but we'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it later, and it was very, very fun. So that's on our top tier. So if you want to help out the show and get some cool stuff in return, you can go to patreon.com/interpartyconflict. Check out the rewards and see what appeals to you and help out the show and, you know, feel good about it. So, yeah, thank you to all of our wonderful patrons that have continued to donate during these times. It's been rough out there, but we really appreciate that you all are there and still willing to help us keep the lights on.
Yeah, thank you.
And then just one more quick thing. Check out the other podcasts on the Crit Nation Fellowship. Check out Crit Academy at critacademy.com. Justin, Ian, and Austin make new and reusable content for players and DMs alike. Also, check out Brute Force and Ignorance. I believe they're still on hiatus, but, you know, fingers crossed, they should be coming out with some more episodes pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And also, D&D Character Lab is not making episodes anymore. I think I said a few episodes ago that I thought they might have been, like, making a comeback or something. I don't think they are. I think they have a different show that they're doing instead that's, like, not, I don't think, is D&D related. So, anyway.
Okay.
But still, you can check them out. They've got episodes they've got their back catalog of episodes. So check them out. They made characters every week and pitted them against each other to debate whose characters were better. And Jeff and I were on a Halloween themed episode a couple years ago, I think.
Oh yeah.
I'll put the link to that in the show notes. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was great.
Okay. Enough of all the admin and such. Let's get into some questions, Jeff.
All right. Our first question comes from Peace Joy Pancakes on Discord. Have you ever played a world-building game such as Dawn of Worlds or Microscope and used the result for D&D or other tabletop RPGs? If so, how did it go? And if no, would you ever consider using it for a future campaign?
Yeah, so we've had this for a while, and we hadn't played either of those games, so we weren't going to talk about it till we had. And now that we have played Dawn of Worlds, I really wanted to bring this in and talk about it because holy crap, Dawn of Worlds was so much fun.
Yeah, it was a good
so
time.
So much fun. I'm hitting my desk. I can't, like, I was still thinking about this game and all the crazy stuff that we came up with. Like, I couldn't fall asleep that night because I was like, my mind was racing with all the crazy stuff that we did.
Yeah, yeah. It was really silly. It was really fun. It was exciting. Yeah, it was cool.
It took me completely by surprise how much fun it was. So for anyone who has not played or even heard of Dawn of Worlds, here's what Dawn of Worlds is. It is a world building game. So like if you're, you know, in D&D, you've got your different campaign settings. You've got your Faerun, you've got your Eberron, you've got your Ravnica, you've got Greyhawk. You've got a world that you're in that already has, you know, NPCs. It's got monsters. It's got gods, it's got cities, continents, and so on. You can also make your own world. A lot of people do. A lot of people make their own campaign setting. We've had episodes in the past where we talked about the benefits of using a pre-generated world or making a world yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you are interested in making a world yourself, it's a lot of work, and you know, not all of that work is fun. However, there are games like Dawn of Worlds where you and a group of, you know, you get your players together or whatever, just a group of players take turns building the world, not just building the world, but building the world's history.
Yeah.
So the way the Dawn of Worlds works is it's meant to be played in person. We were able to get around that by having using a virtual whiteboard. Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes. I think the one that we used was Miro.com, Miro.com is pretty easy to use. But anyway, so you, let's say you're playing this in person, you have a big sheet of paper, and then one person is going to be not really the dungeon master. Like, you know, nobody really has authority over everybody else, but one person just draws a shape for the first, you know, for the way the continent looks at the beginning. And then also the rules need somebody to keep kind of meticulous notes about what happens. So I did that when we played it. Like I drew the continent, and then I also kept track of everything that happened. So as the game goes on, you take turns. You all you need to play is 2d6, and then you need this sheet of paper with the map drawn on it, and then, like, you know, a pencil and an eraser. So you each turn, you roll 2d6. That's how many points you have. You then go around the table. You know, each person rolls on their turn to get some points. You can then spend those points to do various things, either to alter the world, to, like, alter the terrain, alter the continent or whatever. You can alter the climate. You can create races. You can create organizations. You can cause cataclysms. You can create an avatar. So the idea is that each of the players is one of the gods that is creating the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can decide what type of a god you are. I saw some videos of groups where they did that. Like, one person was like, oh, I'm the nature god. Another person was like, oh, I'm the order, you know, the god of order, and so on. You can do that. You don't have to. We just kind of did it, like, each of us just, we were just whatever. I was Gabe, the god of whatever this world is called.
Uh-huh.
And so you have these points. If you don't spend them, you can save them up and you can spend them on things that are more expensive, or you get a bonus actually if you use most of them up. So, like, you're kind of incentivized to keep using them. When you first start the game, each round is a 500-year period. So, like, it's like over long periods of time. So it's really cheap. It costs very few points to alter the landscape and to alter the climate and such, because this is happening over centuries. However, it's a lot more expensive to create races, for example. And so the first age is just kind of like the creation of the world, you know, the age of continents, I guess. I don't think the game actually gave it a real name. So the first age is long periods of time. The mm-hmm. second age, after five rounds, the group as a whole, you decide whether you want to move on to the next age or stay in the same age. And then after a certain point, you kind of get forced to move to the next stage.
Yeah.
So once you're in the second age, it's more expensive to alter terrain, but cheaper to make races. And to do things that involve races. And then also the time frame gets smaller. Instead of 500 years per round, it's 100 years per round.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, the world's history is getting a little bit more granular, I guess.
Yeah.
And then you go through that for another five or more rounds. And then after that, you get into, like, the very, very in-depth point where it's almost year to year. It doesn't have to be. It can be, like, a few years per round. But it's like you're getting right into the actual history of the people, history of the civilizations, and so on. At that point, it's a lot more expensive to alter the terrain because you have much less time. But other things, you know, like the organizations and such, become a lot cheaper. So you're going through the world. You start off in, like, the big, you know, the eons, and then you get into the, you know, the centuries, and then you get into the day-to-day. Essentially.
Right. Yeah. So it's like the idea is, like, yeah, you build the physical world, then you populate that world, and then you do all, like, the, you know, the more of the intrigue stuff, you know, like more like things like wars and you know, alliances and, you know, espionage, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And we didn't get to the final age. We ran out of time near the end of the second age. So I don't know how that one is going to go. We definitely are going to play that again soon and try to finish this out. But I was really nervous that it wasn't going to be a lot of fun. It was just going to be like, oh, okay, sure, I put some mountains here. Because, like, when you go to alter the terrain, you spend a certain number of points, and then, like, each inch of the map, you can do whatever you want with 1 inch of the map, or you can spend multiple, you know, you can do that multiple times to affect a larger area. So you could be like, okay, I'm going to put a mountain here. You could also be a little bit more interesting and say, I'm going to put the tallest mountain in the world right here.
Sure.
You can be like, okay, I'm going to change the coastline a little bit. Or you could say, my avatar is a big dragon and it just tore a chunk out of the continent. So now there's a big like bay here where there wasn't one before. Nice. So you can do that. When you get into races and such, now I started off telling the players, if possible, I would like to make a world that we can then play campaigns in. Because, you know, that is kind of the question here is, have you ever done this and then use the result for D&D?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to, however, by the time we started the game, I stressed to everybody, don't feel beholden to D&D. Don't worry about whether this will make for a good D&D game. I want to just have fun first.
Yeah.
And we did. We very much had fun. And so as a result, we have such bonkers stuff. At one point, I had made, there was a portion of the map that I had made like icy and snowy. And then I decided, you know, we got to the point where everybody was making races and such. And I thought, you know, hey, we don't have humans yet. I'll throw some humans over here, you know, kind of like the Nords from Elder Scrolls or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
That wasn't my intent, but Dustin called me out on that. And so I said, what the heck? Yeah, sure. They're like the Nords. In fact, I called them the Drawn because it's just Nord backwards. And then there's a point where you can make a sub race, which is, it's a little bit cheaper than making a regular race, but it's, the idea is you're making a race that has split off from the origin.
Right.
And so one of our other patrons, Alistar the Minotaur, he came up with a sub race. And like, here's the thing, when you're making stuff in this, you can do stuff that affects other players. You're not competing. There isn't right. winners. There isn't losers. And that took us, me especially, a long time to realize. You can very much, if someone makes some gnomes, you can be like, oh, okay, those gnomes are all vampires now, if you want to. Like, you could do that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the crazy stuff that happened was us interacting with other stuff the other players had done. So I made these humans, you know, just ice-dwelling humans. And then Alistar said, okay, I'm going to make a sub-race of these humans that are undead. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Okay, so I'm thinking like some icy zombies or something. No, that is not what he made.
No, not even close.
What he came up with was, after the Drawn bury their ancestors, sometimes the hearts of the dead Drawn come back to life, dig their way out of the corpses that they're imprisoned in, and then go and live amongst the rest of the Drawn. And here's the thing, they're not evil. They are good aligned, in fact. And one of the things that they can do, these like heart zombies, is they can hug themselves onto a living Drawn. And when they do, it gives the Drawn various benefits, including like immunity to cold. And that's it. Like these are sentient, undead hearts that are friendly and hug you and make you stronger. And that is so, I cannot get over how bonkers that is, but because I am ostensibly going to be the DM that is going to try to make this into a campaign.
Uh-huh.
I'm now thinking about, okay, so what does that mean? Like what is the world affecting implications of this? And so I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, the Drawn probably respect and possibly revere these undead. Like that is the heart of my ancestors. That's like my great grandfather's heart has come back to life to make our family stronger or something.
To give me hugs.
Sure. And now I don't think that I would make the Drawn a playable race. Or no, sorry, not the Drawn, but the Klingons is actually what they're called. What these heart right, zombies yeah. are called. I don't know if I would make the Klingons a player race, because I don't sure. know what that would be.
Right, yeah.
But if you play as a, you know, as a Drawn, there will very much be part of the society that is like, oh, are you one of the ones with a heart, you know, with a zombie heart or without?
Yeah.
It even actually kind of makes me think of going with Klingons in Star Trek, particularly Star Trek Deep Space Nine. There's a race of beings called the Trill that are a humanoid race. They look like humans And then there is also a symbiotic race on their planet that are these parasites that live inside them. And so I'm kind of drawing some inspiration from that, how that will affect the world and society and so on.
Sure, yeah.
But like, I never would have come up with that in a million years. I would never have decided, okay, so there's some heart zombies that when they hug you, you get healthier and become immune to cold. No, I would not do that. But I didn't have control over that. Alistar did, and I have to respect what he did, and I love that I have to respect what he did, because it's so bonkers, but that's the sort of stuff that makes a game interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There was another point in this. While we're doing this, Dustin was, because again, at the very beginning, we were just all kind of doing our own thing. Dustin made a race of axolotls. So they're like these sort of like reptile amphibian creatures.
Yeah, they're like little newt amphibious guys they had like the weird little frills on them. Yes. They're cute. Look them up.
They are. They definitely are. So he made his like primary race was a bunch of these. And then he had a few sub-races that split off. And some of them were desert dwelling. Some of them lived on an island. Some of them lived in the water. And at some point, he decided he was going, because I had made, there was like, I made, because you can, again, you can do kind of whatever you want when you make something. So instead of just making a lake, I decided, oh, this is a lake of poison. And then I had a lake of poison that I later like, I was like, oh, maybe there's some hags that live in this lake of poison. And then at some point I said, okay, the hags are going to use magic to make a floating island above the lake of poison. And that island is itself made of poison and so on. Well, so Dustin decided he made an avatar that was one of his like axolotl, or I guess it was the axolittles. So it was one of like the desert dwelling axolotls.
Right.
I think.
The axolittles. Yes. Oh, they're salamanders, by the way. Sorry.
Okay. And so he had one of them basically like rise up and become part god and get an army of his countrymen and then march across the continent to, I think he was going to put it to try and purify this poison. I might be remembering that wrong, but he was marching across the country towards all of this poison and such. Well, again, Alistar over in that same area, he had a race of like alligator vampires. So he had an area that was like it fit with the lake of poison that I had created. So like there was very much like a corruption, like a big area of corruption over there. And so he decided, oh, we can't have this army of goody goodies coming over and trying to purify our corruption. So he attacked Dustin's army with several of his armies. And this was the first, like, we had a couple sort of antagonistic things that have happened, but not, this was the first like directly combative thing that had happened.
Right. Yeah.
And in my head, I was still partly in that attitude of like, uh-oh, you know, we're competing against each other. You know, this isn't going to be good, but no, it totally was. It was awesome. They fought and the vampire zombies totally obliterated the axolotls, that army, which was disappointing, but two cool things came of it. Number one, the avatar, the demigod axolotl was able to escape and then go back and create like a defensive barrier against the spread of corruption. And also the vampires now made a sub race that are axolotls that have been turned into vampires. And like, that's such a cool development. That's such a cool thing in the history of the world that led up to wherever the game is going to start. That is awesome. I love that that kind of stuff happened. And it would not have, that would not have been in the history of the world if it had just been me sitting down being like, okay, what's a campaign setting we can do? I don't know. I guess maybe some alligators. No, I would not have come up with alligator zombies or whatever. Because that's bonkers.
Because it's ridiculous. But yeah, I like that that's that whole side of the world is slowly becoming like, I feel like it's like a Borg situation going on over there.
kind of.
Slowly turning like the rest of the world into vampires or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, is that going to stop? Or is somebody going to put that in check? Or is that going to be like just going to slowly spread across the entire world. I don't know.
We'll find out, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, just it was so much fun, and the freedom to really just kind of be like whatever you want was so cool. In fact, if I had told everybody, try to keep in mind that this is going to be a D&D campaign, try to do stuff that will translate well into D&D. No, I feel like that would have hamstrung any creativity for me, at least. Like half of my creativity would have been out the window, because it's like, okay, well, you know, what am I going to do? What's going to work well for the game? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like with this, you really got to just let loose. And yeah, like with you, like, especially you, Gabe, like you're super creative and good at writing and stuff. Like you'll find a way to turn anything into a, you know, like you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Like there's going to be a way, like, you know, the adventures that you'll run in that world might not delve into every little detail of sure. all the weird stuff that's been going on, but you know, you could definitely find a way to like put it in that setting and to make references to the other stuff, you know, like, or, you know, or at the very least you find like one little bit, like the war, you know, the war with the vampires or something, you know,
sure.
like that could be the setting, you know. It doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to take place in the entire world. You just kind of pick a thing that happened and then like make that the focus of your campaign or adventure. But then like you also have all this other stuff to pull from if you need it.
Yeah.
I think this is, yeah. Like I think it's a lot more fun than it is just kind of do, you know, go with it. And then yeah. like worst case scenario, you might have to make a few, you might have to make up a few playable races, but like you
sure.
could probably just flavor, you know, existing things.
Yeah. I figured, I would just, you know, whatever I could reflavor, I would reflavor. And then if there was any, you know, if there's something else that just doesn't really fit anything that exists, I can just say they're not a player race, but they still exist in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Like the freaking heart zombies.
Yeah.
It's so bonkers.
Right. Yeah. No, the heart zombie thing. Yeah. I think that's pretty easy. That's just a, like, that's maybe like, that is a subrace of Drawn,
mm-hmm.
that like a subrace of them has the heart, and then like, which
ooh,
means that they
okay.
have, you know, a resist, have like advantage against something or other.
Sure.
You know, advantage against disease or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
But maybe like, maybe they're a bit slower because they're being hugged all the time. I don't know. So like, you know, they get a penalty to their dexterity, but they also get bonuses to like fighting disease and poison or something.
Sure. It was so much fun. I cannot overstate how surprised I was at how quickly and easily it became fun.
Yeah.
I was, on one hand, I was less, I always, okay. This is a little peek behind the curtain here. I always get stressed out in the week or so before a Patreon game, just cause like, I'm always like, oh, I could be doing more work to prepare. And you know, what if nobody has a good time? And what if they not only have a bad time, but they also stop donating to the Patreon and also stop listening to the show and maybe lose respect for me as a DM. That's, I'm always concerned about these sort of things.
They have such a bad time that they stop listening to the podcast.
And so that's always on my mind. And like with this one, on one hand, I was less nervous because it's like, I'm not preparing a camp, you know, I'm not preparing an adventure for this. I was basically just going to be another player along with everybody else. But then also it's like, but I don't know what I'm doing. What if it's not fun? And then everybody again, don't have fun. And then they stop supporting us and stop listening and lose respect for me. You know, I don't want any of those things to happen. And so, I was very nervous going in. But once like one round in, I was already like, oh, this is really cool. Like we've got something really cool going on here. So big thank you to everybody that showed up for that. That was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll try to schedule another one pretty soon and try to finish up this game.
Yeah.
You know, and then try to, and then I, at one point I had been saying on the, cause I, again, I was trying to prepare for what if this doesn't turn out good at all. So I was saying on the Discord, like, you know, hey, we can do this a few times if we don't have a great time the first, if it doesn't come up with a good campaign world the first time, we can do it again and so on. I do, here's the thing, I do want to do it again. I do want to play more games of this, but I also want to use the world that we made this time. I can't make three or four different campaign worlds, you know what I mean?
Right.
I want to, but I can't.
I mean, the way it's shaped and everything, like, it's a continent, you know, it doesn't have to be the whole world.
That's true. That's true.
So you could have different continents that you know, you just do what they do with World of Warcraft, where they just add another continent and a new race or something.
Sure. Fun fact, actually, when we first started, right before we started Dawn of Worlds, I wasn't sure what the scale of the world was going to look like. So I actually made three continents. I kind of reused the shape of the continents from a fifth edition campaign I ran back when I first started fifth edition. And I just kind of did it as like a bit of a placeholder. But then the more I looked at it, like as we were waiting for everybody to show up, I realized, like, I don't know if I really, I think I would rather just be one continent, because if it's multiple continents, then there will be less necessary conflict, because if you're not fighting over the same land, you know, what's even the point, I guess.
Right.
So I got rid of that. And then I kind of just drew like a big oblong shape that in retrospect looked kind of like Australia, but I had checked some box on the whiteboard, and it had this thing that was like, if you draw something, it will try and predict what you're drawing and then replace what you drew with what they thought you were trying to draw.
Okay.
Which I guess makes sense if you're trying to draw like a square or like a triangle or something, and you really biff drawing that square or whatever.
Sure.
It'll just put a square there. But I basically drew Australia and it replaced it with this like big symmetrical cloud shape.
Like, yeah, it was just a bunch
like
of
like a cartoon cloud.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I mean, it's as good as anything else is going to be. So,
right,
so we stuck with it. And then it got changed so much. Stuff got added to it. Stuff got taken away from it, that the end product looks nothing like a cloud.
Right. Yeah. And then, and I figured because I was spectating, I was like, you know what I can do is, I have like a little map making program. There's a few of them out there, like Inkscape. Inkcarnate. Sorry.
Yep.
Is what I'm thinking of, but I have one, called, Wonder Draft.
Okay.
And so I just started doodling the world, your guys' world in Wonder Draft, and try to, like, you know, try to replicate everything as best I could.
Yeah.
And like one of the tools in that software lets you kind of like rough up the coastlines so they look a little bit more like jagged and stuff.
Sure.
Makes it really easy to make it look more like, you know, a natural continent sort of thing.
Yeah.
So like, I was like, okay, I'll use that tool to just to kind of rough up the edges a bit, so it doesn't look so like, so much like a cartoon cloud.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was still able to keep the major shape and like add all the larger, you know, landmarks and stuff that you guys have made.
Yeah, no, it looks amazing. I was going to ask once we had finished everything, once we had finished the campaign and gotten through all three eras, I was going to actually ask you if you'd be willing to make a map of the continent, but you did it on your own. So thank you.
Yeah. So yeah, I still got to go through because one of the things you definitely want to do in this game is to keep a log of everything that's happened.
Yes. Yes. I took pretty good notes of everything. Also on the whiteboard itself, you can leave like little, you can put a little pin and put a little message with it. Mm-hmm. I here's the thing. I tried recording the audio, but I did a very lazy way of doing it and it didn't work.
Oh.
I wanted to like capture the video and the audio, and I thought that if I just hit my button to capture my screen, I thought it would record everything. It didn't record the audio, unfortunately, but
gotcha. Yeah.
I mean, not that listeners don't think that I would have put that out as like a podcast thing, because it would not have been listenable unless I spent, right, you know, 10 hours editing it, which I wasn't going to do. So
yeah, it was more for just to kind of, for, you know,
so I could refer back to something if I needed to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So I will have to go over. I feel like if you guys finish in the next session, like, and if there's a little bit of time left, we might just kind of go over everything so I can kind of like add more to the map and
sure,
like, you know, what, you know, where was this? Because there's like, there's a few of the races where I'm not sure where they are. Like I maybe didn't hear exactly where they put it when they put it down, but then like the next round started or something. So I'm like, okay, well, there's this race here in here now. I don't know where they live, but they exist.
Sure.
You know, so like, so I do want to kind of go back and, you know, that way I can like add like little icons for like the cities and stuff like that. Okay. In there.
Yeah. That'd be really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I highly, highly, highly recommend Dawn of Worlds. I'll put the link in the show notes to the PDF, but like it's free. You just type in Dawn of Worlds in Google and it'll pop right up. Like I said earlier, it's only a few pages and I think it's 7 or 8 pages, but the last like 3 or 4 are just, there's one page that's just a place to keep track of all your notes. And then it's just kind of lists of like what the abilities are that you can use. So
yeah,
it's real simple. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think half the people that showed up to the game hadn't even read it, and we were able to hit the ground running very easily.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's really not super duper complicated. It's just, you know, it's just about having an understanding of what you're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to roll with what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
Cause like, you know, you definitely can play it with a bit of competition. Like you can play it competitively in a way, but it's not like, you know, you're not doing it for points and you're not doing it for anything. You're just doing it to do it.
Sure.
So like you said before, where you can set yourself up to be like, I'm the god of, you know, death and decay, and I'm the god of life and happiness or whatever.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily need to do that, but I kind of like the idea of doing something like that, or at the very least, like, falling into those roles. Like, yeah, you started off as like, I'm just Gabe, I'm playing or whatever, but now you're Gabe of the dragon, of the illusion dragon folk or whatever. Like, you're the god of these dragons that dwell in the desert and are building an underground labyrinth or something.
Yeah.
It's like, what are they doing down there?
That did happen, listeners.
Yeah. So, you know, like you, maybe the, you know, maybe it's the job of, you know, the things that you create that tell you what kind of deity you are or something. So, you might go in there thinking, okay, I'm going to be the nature god, but you might start having fun doing some other stuff. And then now suddenly you're the god of death.
Ooh, you know, okay.
You know, it's more, you know, let your action shape your title or whatever. So that like, once you have a feeling of like what kind of deity you are, other people might be like, you know, the other deities might be like, nope, don't like that guy. I'm going to have the races I create are going to do what they can to stop the forces of that deity. And like, you know, that could be, it's a competition in a way, but it's really just story building and world building. It's fun.
Sure. The example that you gave of like the nature god, then kind of becoming the death god or whatever, you can work that into the world. If mm-hmm. that does happen, that would be a really interesting part of like, oh yeah, a couple thousand years ago, the god of nature decided they were done with all of this life stuff and moved on to being the god of death. Like that is a thing that you shouldn't necessarily try to stifle that because that's interesting world building.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those things where it's like, I think it's the example you've given of one of the worlds that you made where like, there's two deities, but they're actually the same one.
Yeah, just viewed from different viewpoints.
Right. So it's like, so they're like somebody, these people worship the nature god and these people worship the death god. And little do they know, the nature god became the death god or something.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that's really cool. If I were to play a new game of Dawn of Worlds, having, you know, with the same people, so all of us have experience playing it, I might suggest that we try to decide what type of a god we are at the beginning, maybe. Or at least I would see if everybody wanted to do that.
Yeah.
But it's not definitely not necessary. That can definitely be a fun thing. Yeah. But for us, I kind of preferred that we were all kind of figuring it out as we went.
Yeah, because if you say, I'm going to be the nature god, that might really narrow what you feel like your choices are. It's like, well, I got to do something naturey this turn. It's like, you don't have to. You just do whatever you want, you know? Like, so I feel like if you don't pick something right off the bat, you're less likely to fall into you know, doing the same thing.
Sure. So again, I can't overstate how fun this game was. Everybody out there should go check it out, whether you're going to use it for a D&D campaign or not. But I recommend trying to do that too. Like it can be a fun exercise trying to figure out how to turn a world created in Dawn of Worlds into a tabletop RPG setting.
Yeah.
The question also asked about Microscope, and I'm not familiar with Microscope. We had to look it up as we were starting this question to see what exactly it was. But if anybody has experience with that one, I'd like to hear what it's like. But again, Dawn of Worlds, double thumbs up for me.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So I guess that'll do it for our regular questions. That was we kind of spent a long time talking about that one. Yeah. We still have our social media questions, though. Our last social media question was, have you ever joined a group and felt like you were the only one who knew what they were doing? Because we had a previous question that was, have you ever been the one person who didn't know what they were doing? So this time, have you ever joined a group and like nobody knows what they're doing except for you? Well, you know, good or bad. Not necessarily like, oh, look at these idiots I'm playing with. Just like, you know, maybe you were the only person who had played the game before.
Right. I think I mentioned the last time for myself, like I've been in a group where it was mostly like newer players for the most part. And like, there were a lot of scenarios where it's like, I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, you should just do this. And I had to keep stopping myself from saying anything. One, because I don't want to ruin the fun.
Yeah.
You know, like I was being sort of a grump about it, you know? So I was like, I just can't say anything. I just let everybody have their fun. But it was also, I kept being like the rules lawyer in a lot of situations and like trying to like backseat game for a lot of people. I'm like, I gotta stop doing that. It's a tough thing, but it also helped me realize like, oh yeah, this game is supposed to be fun. Like it's supposed to be fun. It's like, you know, you don't want to get, you know, bogged down, you know, with rules and stuff like that. Just have fun.
Yeah, it's always having because similarly, I've played a lot of games where I was the person teaching everybody how to play. So like, you know, it's mostly newer players, and it is always refreshing when people don't have the preconceived notions that I have when they try to do things that maybe they can't do in the rules, but they're still enthusiastic about what they're trying to do. And it's like I've gotten to the point where so much of the time when I do play, you know, I'm looking at the code behind the matrix. I'm not really thinking about the magic of the game. I'm just like, yeah, okay, I'm going to do this because it is mechanically the most beneficial thing and so on and so on.
Right.
And it always sucks when it gets to that point. So it's always nice to see a newer take on it.
Right. Yep.
So yeah, like with me, lots of times I think I shared a story about a time where the other players very much wanted a different game than I was expecting them to want. And it was weird. I put a link in the show notes for that episode to a YouTube video of the story I submitted for that. Anyway, so let me see. We didn't really get a ton of responses on Facebook. Ian W., that's Ian from Crit Academy, put a link to a GIF from the movie Kung Fu Hustle. And that was the only response we got on Facebook.
Okay.
on Twitter. Oh, we didn't get any on Twitter. I thought we got one on Twitter, but nope, I was mistaken. We got one on Reddit, Alistar the Minotaur, creator of the Klingon Heart Zombies. I'm currently playing in a game where out of six people, only three of us have any experience. And of the players who don't, one is playing the quintessential dark brooding rogue. One is playing a ranger who only after 9 months of playing realized he had spells. And lastly, a lawful good cleric who is still trying to figure out how to play the character as anything other than the designated healer. It's a fun game to be sure, but the difference between those of us with experience and those that don't is really jarring after playing with groups of mostly experienced players. And it anytime you leave one group and then join another group, and there's always an adjustment, and then the bigger differences between the groups can make that adjustment harder and harder. So yeah, been there. And we just got a few on Discord. Dustin says, I recently started a new group consisting of newbies and me, a first-time DM. I've been playing since 3.5, so I was able to improv most of the game. What I soon realized is that new players don't know their stats and skills well enough to know what roles to ask for. To correct this, I would ask them what they wanted to do without roles, and then request from them the requisite role. It worked fairly well. They all felt like they were in full control of their characters, and I got away with all my bad calls because they didn't know any better. And yeah, that's really how you should do it, especially with new players. Even with experienced players, in theory, you could still take the same approach. But yeah, instead of expecting them to make certain roles, just ask them, what do you want to do? And then whatever they say they want to do, you can, as the DM, you can figure out, okay, that would be best as this role, and then make them make that role, and so on.
Yeah.
P-Story Pancake says, I've never entered into a group environment and felt competent, much less knew more than everybody else. So, yeah, okay. And then F.A. Miller says, I haven't been playing D&D for long, but whenever I get a group of friends over for a one-shot, I'm definitely not the noob of the group. One of my friends ignored her character sheet completely and was a sorcerer with the power of memes. Her character sheet was a fighter. The DM and I didn't know how to tell her that this isn't how D&D works, so we just rolled with it. It was by far the most amusing one-shot that I've been a part of, though.
Your character sheet's a fighter, and they're just like, okay, I'm going to do this.
Yep.
All right.
I'm going to cast Lolcats. All right, and then one more. Deborah Soar says, I often run new player intro to D&D tables at conventions. It's really great to be able to help enthusiastic newcomers make characters and run basic classic adventures and see the wonder in the new player's eyes. And yeah, like I said, that's a great benefit of playing with new players is like you can see the magic, you know, the magic that's going through their mind. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So play with some new players, people, I guess. Yeah.
Be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So that was last social media question. Our next social media question is, and this was actually submitted by our friend Jay, have you ever played in a game that featured a sport or in-character game that used its own set of rules or minigame mechanics?
I vaguely remember references to Goat Ball, right?
Yes. So this came about because I was browsing Reddit and somebody, because I've gotten a little bit, I've dipped my toe into miniature painting. I'm subscribed to some miniature painting subreddits, and somebody posted a picture of what looked like an orc about to throw a goat ball.
Uh-huh.
For anyone not familiar, in 3.5 D&D, when Races of Stone came out and they introduced the Goliath race,
yeah,
part of the Goliath like write-up involved this sport that Goliaths play called goat ball. And goat ball was, I don't even really remember what the object of the game was. I picture it like football, but part of it was that you had this ball. It was made out of the stomach of a goat or the hide of a goat or something, and you would throw it to another player. And the way that this would manifest in the rules was you would make an attack roll against your target's AC, but their AC was different because they're not trying to avoid the ball. They're trying to catch the ball.
Uh-huh.
So they didn't have an armor bonus because your armor isn't going to affect that. In fact, you would probably not be wearing armor. But also, if you had a dexterity bonus, that would actually act as a penalty to your AC. And if you had a dexterity penalty, that would be a bonus. Because if you're trying to catch the ball, being dexterous is going to make it easier for them to get the ball to you. Whereas if you're clumsy, it's going to make it harder.
Yeah.
So you're throwing this ball at a pretty low AC and what we would refer to as the goat ball AC.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was in our group chat that we have. I went in there and I was like, y'all remember goat ball AC? Because like, man, that took me back thinking of goat ball AC.
Right.
And so because we would use that for other things. Once we had the concept of goat ball AC, mm-hmm. we would be in combat and we would be like, oh man, toss me that potion. Okay, make a roll against his goat ball AC.
Right.
And like, it's perfect. It transcended goat ball.
Right, yeah.
But then Jay was asking, because he mentioned that he created similar games in his games. Mm-hmm. So he was saying this might make for a good social media question. Basically, have you ever played in a game that had a sport or some other kind of mini game that existed within the, you know, within the world.
Right. Yeah.
So do you, aside from Goat Ball, do you recall anything?
Sport? I don't, like, I can't think of anything specifically. Like, I know, yeah, like, of like a gladiator sort of thing, or like, sure, I where we came up with the Billion Swords of Justice or whatever.
Yeah.
Because
you needed a name for the, to enter the gladiatorial match.
Right. Yeah. We had to come name up with a name. So we're just like, I, or like the festival of, Cauldron.
Yes. The Flood Festival. That's actually what I was going to mention is I made, sure, up a whole bunch of like carnival games basically, yeah, for the players, yeah, to take part in.
So like, yeah, I remember some of those games and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, the only like straight up sport I can think of, it was Goat Ball, which I think involved balancing on rocks.
Oh, I think you're right.
Like the field isn't a field. It's just a bunch of rocks that you kind of have to jump from rock to rock and throw the ball to each other.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Something like that. Like, I think there's balancing on rocks, jumping around, throwing the ball, something like that.
Yes. I in fact, Jay sent us he sent us the picture from Races of Stone of a bunch of Goliaths playing Goat Ball, and they are rocks in a river. So like the rocks are like wet and slippery and you're jumping, oh, from rock to rock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, this picture. Okay. Yeah. Right. And the Goat Ball is this really weird looking thing. It's like, it is just sort of like a roughly stitched together like goat hide wrapped, yeah, around something, maybe.
I guess, yeah. So yeah. Yeah, the question might be a little bit confusing, but you know, have you ever played a game where there was some sort of like a mini game inside the game, preferably something that came into play more than just once, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So let us know what you think. So that'll do it for our questions for today. But before we close out, let's wind down. Let's relax. Let's take a deep breath. Let's remember those who have come before us, who have given their lives and then come back as a heart zombie. So that we may live, we may have a better world to live in, yep, immune to cold, as we toss another log onto the funeral pyre. Today's funeral pyre was submitted by Lask87 via Reddit, and it goes as follows. I was playing in a homebrew campaign as a level 7 half-elf Circle of the Land coastal druid named Lizara, and our party had been at a port city for a few sessions. One night where we learned some news about our villain having smuggling connections, so the party decided to split up and see what we could all learn overnight. I chose to go to the beach with the intent to talk to animals, hoping to learn anything about suspicious boat behavior. My DM reminded me that there had been giant shark spottings in the area, as well as riptides, so an athletics check for swimming may be needed. But I had wild shape and also misty step, so I wasn't too concerned about swimming or dying. So I swam out. I feel like you could just cut the story right there. Like,
that's sure.
Anyway, it keeps going. When the shark did appear, I changed my mind and cast Dominate Beast, and the shark resisted. The spell only had a range of 60 feet, and I later learned the shark moved 50, putting it 10 feet away on its turn.
Ooh.
On my next turn, I immediately used Misty Step to move 30 feet closer to shore and then critically failed my athletics check to swim effectively. The giant shark crit on its one attack, and my DM rolled the damage. I still remember his facial reaction seeing the damage result, and also my friend who leaned over to look at her reaction when she saw the dice. 6d10 turned into 62 damage. Which was more than my total maximum. As my character was alone, underwater, and unconscious, all death saves failed. The DM was nice and didn't have her be devoured without a trace, so the party eventually learned of her washed-up body and got a little bit of closure. She was also blessed with a funeral, so it was kind of a happy ending. So yeah, there you go. That was, that's the story. That's... Sharks are nothing to mess around with in D&D. Seriously.
Yeah, Gabe's got some experience.
I do have some experience.
Yeah. I think Justin from Crit Academy threw a shark at us the time we went out and played with them.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Didn't you like get grabbed out of the boat or something?
Yeah. I was playing a turtle and I was like in my shell.
Oh, boy.
And the shark grabbed me out of the boat and took me under.
Yeah. Sharks are no joke, everybody.
Yeah, that's rough.
So let's raise a glass in memory of Lizara, the half-elf druid, who reminds us, I think you're going to need a bigger boat.
Clink.
That'll do it for today. To submit questions for us to discuss, items for the Dragon's Horde, or stories for the Funeral Pyre, please email us at interpartyconflict@gmail.com. For show notes, links to media mentioned on the show, and running lists of questions and magic items, go to interpartyconflict.com. You can join the discussion on social media. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/interpartyconflict, on Reddit at r/interpartyconflict, on our interparty Discord, or on Twitter at inpartyconflict for our weekly social media questions. Your answers might end up on the show. You can check us out on the podcatcher of your choice. We are on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere you download podcasts. Please leave us a rating, leave us a review. Subscribe, or just tell a friend. If you'd like to support the show monetarily, check out the rewards at patreon.com/interpartyconflict. We have a few different tiers, so anything you can spare, even a dollar a month, would go towards making the show better, and you'll get bonus content for it. So, Jeff, tell us about FriendQuest.
FriendQuest is a YouTube channel where you can watch us play video games, and then we will also be streaming live on twitch.tv/FriendQuestLive. I've been saying FriendQuest stream, but I guess I changed it a while back.
Gotcha.
So twitch.tv/FriendQuestLive. Join us for the Extra Life fundraiser. It is going to be happening on November 7th. So was that the first or second Saturday? I think it's the first Saturday of November. So I think the first of November is a Sunday. So
correct.
So yeah, that's the first Saturday of November. We'll be streaming pretty much as we can all day. Various people are going to be on. I know Griff's going to be on. I'm sure Gabe will want to pop in at some point.
Yeah, when I get off work.
Yeah. I'm actually going to be talking to a few more friends of mine to get more people in on it. We'll just be playing some games, goofing around. There's a lot of new stream friendly games out now, like Among Us and Fall Guys and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. They're really easy to get into and a lot of fun to play, and it's fun to watch too. So
cool.
So yeah, hopefully we'll get a lot of people coming and joining us for that. And feel free to just stick around and just say hey or donate to the Extra Life fundraiser if you want.
Yeah, that's really cool. And then we'll provide more information as it gets closer.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, cool. And then you can go head over to bit.ly/interpartyconflict to take a short survey about our show, what you like, what you don't like, etc. And just for taking it, you'll get 2 free printable board games courtesy of Mary and Tom over at hollandspiel.com. And our music is made by Boxcat Games from Nameless the Hackers RPG. So, Jeff, until next time,
tell them I'm going fishing.